Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Kenny Vasai. Kenny is the founder of Kalen Space. Kenny, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Christian. Great to be here.
Oh, our pleasure. So let's start with Kalen Space. What problem is it solving in the market?
Yeah, great question. So I when I was at NASA for many years, one of the challenges we had was finding the best and the best companies that are providing various products or services for the space industry, you know, from launch services to actually building a satellite bus, instruments, components, and so forth. So, and a lot of that process was manual. Who do you know, meeting, working with prime contractors, and so forth. So now, a step back over the past 5 years, or since emergence of a SpaceX, you know, commercial space industry is growing globally, right? There are companies in the US, North America, South America, global stage, Europe, Asia, Australia, that are producing great products, great technologies for the space industry. But then for them, getting to customers, finding customers is difficult. At the same time, for the users who are looking for these technologies, it's a challenge to find out who's doing what. How do I compare, right, the performance, the capabilities of these technologies and companies? So that's why I decided to start Kalen Space, with an application platform that allows vendors, space sector service providers, to showcase their products and capabilities, and users can then find these products and capabilities and compare performance capabilities. So it gives you a choice in selecting, let's say, a satellite bus provider or an instrument developer. And the platform allows not only products, but also services. Now the space ecosystem is changing to as a service model as well, just like, for example, SpaceX providing launch services for NASA. So this is growing across the spectrum. There are companies that are providing, sending payloads to the lunar surface with landers and rovers. So these are all as a service, or mission operations as a service. So the service companies can also showcase their capabilities through my platform to a global market, right, as this ecosystem is growing. So it's really allowing digital transformation of space commerce.
So it's interesting. I wasn't expecting you to use the word commerce, but if you can hold that thought for a moment, my for a benefit of our audience, what are some of the common use cases that we see in space? And, you know, my initial thoughts go to satellites. You hear Elon talk about making it to Mars, but I have a feeling that it's much more broader than that. How should we think about space?
Exactly. So there is, if you just take low Earth orbit, right, these are satellites that get launched to low Earth orbit. There's a wide range of use cases. The biggest one, Earth observation, right? Earth observation, when I was at NASA, we were doing this for climate science, right? Climate change. There's also Earth observation for disasters, right? Monitoring disasters. Imagine if your satellite is depending on if you have a constellation of satellites looking at Earth, and they can give you early warning for tornadoes or hurricanes, right? NOAA does that, right? And there are commercial companies that are providing those capabilities. So Earth observation for, again, climate type of or disaster type of cases. And also insurance companies, right? They can rely on data that is being provided by satellites that they can monitor, or at least assess, evaluate the disaster zone for, you know, various, you know, insurance use cases. So Earth imaging is not only Earth imaging, is there are different bands, right? You can do optical Earth imaging, you can do hyperspectral imaging, which plays into agriculture ecosystem as well. And also there's synthetic aperture radar, SAR, that can be used for a wide range of applications. And then also intelligence, right? You know, we can see that right now with, you know, various challenges that are happening at the global stage. Maxar, for example, is a big provider of satellite images that can be used for a wide range of use cases. So that's the imaging part. And then there's communication part with SpaceX, with Starlink, right? That allows ongoing communication regardless of where you are on the planet, right? Kuiper, that's Amazon Blue Origin, is providing those capabilities. And then, so that's kind of general type of communication satellites, right? Networking satellites for either television, DirecTV. Those are kind of normal applications. And then also, the lunar economy, right? This is a new emerging area that NASA has been providing the kind of the ignition for the future lunar economy through the Artemis program. So you probably heard the news. There are several commercial companies now that are trying to put landers on the lunar surface. So imagine 50 years ago, through the Apollo program, government-owned, NASA did everything. And now we have startups that are trying to send landers and rovers to the lunar surface. We had, Firefly was the latest that was successful, and there have been several attempts by other startups. So that's a new emerging area that is going to be very exciting over the next 5 to 10 years, and it will continue to grow, right?
And is there a predominant use case for moon exploration? Is it mining or is it for further exploration?
So initially, and that's this is where the role of government comes in, especially for areas that, more of an early R&D, setting the stage. NASA did the NASA was really the NASA and ESA and other space agencies opened up the low Earth orbit, right, for commercial companies to come in. Same thing for lunar. So NASA's plan is to build a lunar base in the South Pole region of the moon. So think of a base that's infrastructure, right? What do we need for infrastructure? Power, communication, right, transportation. And NASA's model is to rely on commercial companies to do that, right? And instead of NASA building and owning everything like during the space shuttle days, NASA wants to rely on commercial companies so we can start this commercial ecosystem, right? So companies that can transport payloads to the lunar surface for either crewed operations when we build the base, lunar base, or for science investigations. And then on the commercial side, exactly, mining is an exciting area. We found ice deposits in the South Pole region of the moon in the lunar craters. So if you can extract ice deposits, that's water, H2O, hydrogen and oxygen. You can use oxygen for various use cases for fuel, same for hydrogen. So imagine if you have future bases on the lunar surface, that could be another base for sending additional missions to deep space or eventually Mars. So that's another exciting area for mining, and again, supporting future infrastructure on the lunar surface for NASA, ESA, and other government agencies.
I'd be curious if this is maybe a legacy byproduct of the lack of investment leading up to today. But one of the things I've heard anecdotally is that a lot of the people who worked on this legacy technology aren't around anymore, and that you have engineers and programs who are having to start from scratch. Is there any truth to that?
There is some of that, but I think we've had a pretty good transition from government to commercial space. And I think NASA has done a great job to transfer that technology, right? Most government agencies, NASA has a tech transfer actually process in place. And also just through the infusion of NASA people going leaving and working for the industry, that cross-pollination has been happening, right? A lot of the engineers that are at SpaceX actually, left NASA, for example, and joined SpaceX or other and other companies as well. So this cross-pollination has been happening over the past decade, which has been helping that tech transfer. And as these new space companies mature, then they bring in new fresh blood into the company, and they learn and they move on. They start their startups. I think you probably heard of, several SpaceX employees that have left and started their own startups in space tech. So that's pretty exciting. That is this domino effect of, government started everything, right? With Apollo going to shuttle space station. And now we're in this, I call it the Wright brothers moment of commercial space.
Interesting. So, just on a side note, if there are any engineers out there who are interested in pursuing a career in space tech, are there any undergrads in particular that are you found are best suited, Mechie, EE, Aero, or is it really just a passion? for space. Yeah, that'll, combined with a STEM background, that'll put you on the right path.
You hit the nail. It's really the passion for space, and then definitely STEM background. And it's really regardless of whether you're a software engineer, because to launch a spacecraft, land on the moon, fly a satellite, we need software engineers, right? My training was an aerospace engineer, but definitely aerospace engineering degrees, electrical engineering, mechanical. That's what, space. You're building these large, complex systems. And we use all the engineering disciplines from, hardware to software, and now even with the emergence of AI tech, AI scientists, for example, for especially for analyzing the data and data that we get either from Earth observation or science missions, astrophysics, right? Looking for other planets. There is a wide range of capabilities. And also if there are opportunities for even non-STEM type of jobs, if someone is really passionate about space, I think there's a lot of opportunities more of on the business side or marketing side if you're working for commercial companies. So really the sky is not the limit.
Interesting. You also, your experience has been with NASA. I'd be curious, any other nations' space programs who have a great reputation for being forward thinking and, are currently, let's call it, part of the race?
Yeah, great question. So at NASA, when I was working on the ISS, International Space Station, that's what we call it, International Space Station. We work with European Space Agency, Japanese Space Agency, Russian Space Agency, which we're still that process continuing. So this was, ISS was a great example of really a true international effort. And European Space Agency, they have great capabilities because it's a all the member states of European Union that are members of European Space Agency. So this is emerging area, and kind of the traditional government-run space agencies are, between NASA, ESA, again, Japanese, Canadian Space Agency as well, I should mention, because they provide the robotic arm for a space station. And then there's almost like every few months or so, now you hear about, different countries forming their own space agencies. And now what NASA learned from ISS about this international collaboration with the Artemis program, which is going back to the moon, Artemis is also an international partnership program, right? Where we have European Space Agency and countries that, probably didn't have a space agency. And because of Artemis, probably at got excited. They want to be part of the lunar economy, lunar exploration. And they're, almost every other month or so, you hear about NASA announcement that a new country joined the Artemis program. So yeah, from a commercial space, I would say U.S. is still kind of leading. A lot of the, space business is happening in the U.S. because of both on the government and commercial side, but great startups coming out of Europe, Asia, right? South Korea, Japan, Singapore. So it's global. And that's one thing about, when I started the application is, how do we leverage, how do we take advantage of these great technology that are popping up globally and connect them with customers and allow this, again, what I mentioned, the commerce in the space happen.
So, fantastic background. Thank you for sharing a bunch of questions about Kaelin. Before we jump into it, would love to know, you mentioned NASA, would love to know what your career looked like leading up to founding the company.
Yes, so I mean, I was a space geek from the beginning when I was a kid, just going out camping, sleeping outside, looking at the stars, always wondering, what's up there, right? Initially, I wanted to become an astronomer, right? And then my parents tilted me towards engineering. That, well, astronomy, what are you going to do? You have to, maybe go teach at the school. So then I pivoted towards engineering side and went to school for aerospace engineering. And my dream was to work for NASA, right? And that was my first job was at NASA, and it was a perfect place at NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston. And I had the opportunity to work with on the space shuttle program, working on flight dynamics groups, and also in EVA and robotics. EVA is NASA's term for extravehicular activity. This is where astronauts go outside either the shuttle and out of the space station to perform various tasks. And that was, you know, any aerospace engineer's dream job. Working with astronauts in the Neutral Buoyancy Lab, it's a big pool that NASA trains astronauts to do spacewalk. So that was my first job working in the human space flight. So that was awesome.
Wow.
And I wanted to kind of, during the dot-com area, I wanted to get a taste of, you know, high tech, move back to California, and then work a little bit in the industry, semiconductor industry, to get that experience. And then missed space, went back to space, worked at NASA Ames. And that was, you know, really great because Ames is one of the NASA's three R&D centers. And that gave me exposure to all the science missions that NASA leads across earth science, astrophysics, exoplanet research. I had a great opportunity to be involved with the Kepler mission and also a couple of the lunar missions, the LCROSS mission. That actually, that was a mission that we found water deposits in the South Pole region by impacting the spacecraft to the lunar surface. So that was a great experience. You know, again, I've been a space guy from the beginning, and it was just pursued my passion till now.
Fantastic. So coming back to Kalem, it sounds like you had firsthand experience with some of the challenges the industry faced, and it sounds like the ability to surface technology as well as matching buyers and sellers was top of mind. Was there any defining moment that was the catalyst for launching Kalem, or did you just know that this is a problem that needed to be solved?
That's a great question. You know, initially, I actually had a different vision. It was a more complex vision in mind. And one thing about a founder in a startup, you learn, but you have to be flexible, right? If you need to pivot, and for various needs, pivot, right? And so that's some of the things that you have to navigate as a founder in a startup. So my initial vision was actually launching platforms to space. It was pretty exciting, actually, thing with robotics capabilities. But I think that the market was, there was interest from NASA, but, you know, pitching to various VCs, I think for good reasons. You know, the mention was, if NASA is interested, you need commercial customers as well, right? You can't just rely on government, for example, right? And I think what I had in mind was, I would say it's still 5 to 10 years out, right? So for that reason, I pivoted. And I saw the area that, hey, you know, there's just a lot of technology that are growing. I can build a platform, and then I still provide the services through this platform. One of the things I did was I partnered with a university here in California, Santa Clara University. When I was at NASA, they provide, the students actually provide mission operations and control satellites for us, the missions that we did. So I partnered with Santa Clara University, and that was the STEM aspect of it, that we can also provide, you know, those kind of services for either universities or small satellites, CubeSats, where think of it as, we call it 3U CubeSats that we launched. And the students, these are undergrads and, you know, some graduate students, that basically they were able to control the satellites for us. So the professor I was working with at Santa Clara University, he developed a course that the students can take in satellite ground segment satellite operations, and then they control the satellites for us, right? So I'm still, you know, Santa Clara is one of my partners that we can provide mission operation services to either companies or universities that are looking for that. So I was really strong in the following this STEM aspect of it, because the best way to get the experience, to get hands-on for students, right? Try to get internship, or at least get take classes that you can apply to once you graduate. So I pivoted to build this platform that I can bring in, you know, the services. And some of the services that I provide is helping startups, right, with go-to-market strategy, the lessons learned, you know, the scars that I've got over the past 20 years or so, and also with investment as well. I'm in the process of making partnership with investment firms that we can help startups. So part of it, you know, the goal is really to help the ecosystem, because this is an exciting era for commercial space. It's a market that will continue to grow. It's not like, okay, 5 years from now, this market is going to go away. It's the opposite. It will grow over the next 5, 10 decades to come. And my goal is to help the ecosystem.
And it's interesting. So it sounds like you're touching on a whole host of really important facets to help companies flourish. One of the ones I think about in space tech is that obviously it depends on the solution, but it has a potential to be capital intensive. How have you found How do you square the two? Because, if you think about an early stage company, there's a tremendous amount of risk. You have to your point, prove commercialization. What counsel or insights would you provide to the entrepreneurs who are interested in pursuing, a hardware-based space solution, knowing that it could require a tremendous amount of capital to build a prototype, or, move the business along far enough that you can validate a proof of concept?
That's a great question, especially for deep tech and especially space tech, because especially those companies that are building hardware, satellites or components for space operations. So, on the VC, certainly you have to look at all options, right? As just like any other startup, but because of amount of investment and also the time, right? It's not something like a SaaS software type of platform that you can say, within a 6 months or a year or two, you can start having bringing revenue and so forth. Usually takes, space tech takes 5 to 8 years, right? So you have to find out what are the VCs that are actually do invest in space tech. There are, it's the number, believe it or not, is growing because they see the opportunity, right? And also government, right? Government, not just NASA, DOD. Now we have Space Force, right? So there are a lot of opportunities through small business SBIR contracts. So there are ways that you can get the initial seed funding from government, and then once you know, we call it the technology readiness level, TRL scale. So once you move through the TRL scale with that seed funding from government, right, especially if it's a technology that either NASA or DOD is interested in, then that gives you more credibility and also ammo to go and pitch to VCs, right? Because you say, hey, government is interested. They provided seed funding for me. And that's a seed funding because there's no equity that government is going to take. So that's a great path to get your technology more matured. And then at the same time, then you can pitch to VCs. So that becomes a win-win. So that's kind of, think of it, that's the area where dual use is great, because then you can, apply to both, government side. And from DOD, there's various agencies and that are investing or interested in investing in space technologies. So yeah, so that's really try to leverage all sources, VCs that are interested in space, and then government funding as well.
I've been interested in your take. So it totally makes sense. The number of clients who have governments both at the state and federal level as clients. And hey, even if it's a grant, it's still revenue. Still gives you an opportunity to conduct R&D, an opportunity to learn. But for those in the audience who may not be as familiar with those opportunities, a lot of times the government agency is sharing with the market what they're looking for. What's your position between, a founder who is looking to get their company off the ground and sees a grant that's available, but it doesn't necessarily match up with their vision of what they would like to see? Do you have an opinion of, okay, just start someplace and iterate from here? Or, if you, in your experience, is the I don't know, disconnect's the right word, but the lack of 100% correlation between founder vision and government buyer, do you think, would you maybe tell a founder to think twice before pursuing that grant?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it really depends, right? One thing about, engineers coming in into startup world, right? Technologists, engineers, scientists, you really have to demonstrate you have a business, right, in order to get funding. And whether, depending on what your technology or product is, right, you may have to, the Silicon Valley, the startup world, MVP, right? Your minimum viable product, right? You have to figure out what is that MVP that can get you to a point that you can actually start bringing in customers, right? Because every investor is going to look for, you have customers, right? You have a product that can sell and grow. So the biggest part is figuring out what that MVP should be, and then from that point you can build upon, right? And whether a pivot is needed to give you that initial funding. I've seen companies, the startups, that, for example, they've get SBIR funding because they're primary interest is in the space, for example, right? But at the same time, they have other products that are maybe using similar technologies, right? But it's a bit different to bring in some commercial funding as well. So that's another thing I've seen. Several startups, this is when I was at NASA, I was reviewing proposals, SBIR proposals. So I've seen a lot of that as well. That company were doing kind of multiple things because you've got to bring in funding, right? At the end of the day, you can't grow if, especially if you bring employees in, right? You got to have something that you can sell and bring revenues in. And if you don't have that, you can't grow and it's hard to get investment. So yeah, I think you have to be open to the idea of figuring out what the MVP is and then how you can, navigate through this ecosystem.
I think it makes logical sense. Even though there's not a perfect match, you still need revenue to keep the lights on. If you can live to fight another day, you can be arguably one step closer to your bigger vision. So with that, let's talk about a little bit more about Kaelin. What's been your experience in building the company, from day one until today?
Yeah, it's been a great experience, very eye-opening as well, right? Especially for someone who came from government. I work in the commercial in Silicon Valley as well, so I have the industry experience as well, mostly for the larger companies. But as a startup, I always compare, a corporation, you're on a cruise ship, and a startup, you, as a founder, you're on a dirt bike, right? That you can move fast, pivot, go up in the hills, and it's fast. But the exciting part is wearing multiple hats, especially I was a only founder, and certainly if you have a team as well, you can kind of spread based on the skill sets, right? Who's good and what. But that navigation decision, fast decision making, to me that's been very exciting, right? But the challenge is one thing as a founder you have to learn is you have to become a salesperson. And I know that's not very easy for technologists, engineers, scientists to do. And maybe if you have a co-founder, you can bring a person that can actually do the selling part, marketing part, because again, as I mentioned, you have to be able to sell your product, right? And as a founder, the biggest thing you have to do, either selling, you have to sell to VCs for funding or to customers. And that becomes a good part of your job. For me, just having the perspective of talking to VCs and getting their input, right? And being able to be flexible, not be very close. I mean, we all have great ideas, right? But at the same time, you have to be able to take the input and then figure out, again, going back to the MVP, what is my product? How do I, and get to a point that I can move to the next step, right? Especially if you're getting venture funding, right? Seed, pre-seed, seed stage to Series A, you have to show growth and customer base. So just understanding all those, a lot of founders actually don't even know that what is the different stages and how you can grow. So those are some of the challenges that you have to, as a founder, learn the financial aspects of funding, venture funding, especially if you're going that path. And how do you get to customers, right? How do you sell your product? I think those are probably the biggest challenges, especially for founders that are coming from a technology background.
So as a solo founder, was that a conscious decision to not have a co-founder, or would you have been open to it if you had found a person who complemented your expertise and skill
Yeah,
sets?
I was open, but I at least I had a good network of ex-NASA engineers and my industry friends and colleagues that I was able to initially talk to, and they kind of provided the advisory role to me, and it was great. And even now, I do have I leverage my network, for example, for the more of a service, some of the services that Kaelin Space can provide to customers, right? I can bring in expertise across various engineering disciplines, right? That can help either if it's a startup or any company that's interested in various aspects of the space, from mission design and design development analysis. So I'm still leveraging that because currently I'm providing service. It's a service company, right? Versus is building a product myself. So I leverage my network right now. So far, it hasn't been an issue, but it's been challenging, right? Because you have to be comfortable with wearing multiple hats, but bring expertise when it's needed.
I mean, it makes good sense. I guess, the other side I would ask is how much have you thought about just Dilution is actually real. Each founder you have arguably has, an identical percentage of the cap table. But it sounds like you realize that you didn't necessarily need to bring on a co-founder, just given that your time and grade and the extent of your network.
Right, yeah. I mean, it was if well, I would have seen a immediate need, I would have done that. It wasn't like I wasn't open to that, but I think I was able to move forward myself and use my existing network.
Makes great sense, and I think that's going to dovetail the answer to my next question is scale. So, as part of the pursuit of product market fit, every founder has to answer the question is how am I going to get the word out? How have you thought about it? Do you feel like this is something where, you have this network and you're gonna leverage it, or have you gone broader or done anything outside of your network to help bring the company to life?
Great question. Yeah, I've been using my network, and at the same time, I'm just kind of post my MVP, where I'm sharing this with at various space conferences, right? Going to kind of the top space conferences here in the U.S. and also Europe. That to basically my priority over the next 6 months or so is to get as many vendors, suppliers, service providers to join the platform, because then there are a lot of capabilities that I can add. Right, and to go beyond the MVP, because imagine, as a customer, you can come into the platform and just list your requirements, and the requirement could be in any phase of a space mission. I have categories for even test facilities. I'm adding another category to the platform for manufacturing companies, for example, to showcase their capabilities globally, right? Globally, friendly nations and the states that have services that can be provided. So there are a lot of capabilities that I can add, but currently, yeah, I'm using the which is that's the challenge. Like for startups, they can't go to every conference globally to showcase their products. That's why I thought, a platform that can be accessed anywhere, no matter where you are, to showcase your capabilities to the global market can be very useful. So yeah, I'm kind of goal is to get as many vendors and users added, but over time, and then start marketing it out to various space forums and platforms.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's wise. I mean, I think, depending on the stage of the journey you are, there's value earlier on being myopic and, putting the proverbial more eggs in one basket, just given, scope of time and resources that we have available to us. Kenny, I've really, I've learned a lot. This has been great. Before we wrap up, a bit of a retrospective. What advice or wisdom would you pass along to your younger self as you reflect on your journey up to today?
Wow, that's a very good and tough question. Let's see. I think it's a the ecosystem is very exciting now, especially with commercial space. I think as a young engineer, for example, that you're graduating, right? You always have a vision. I think the flexibility is the key, especially now. I'm kind of thinking about the current dynamic versus when I graduated, right? Because current dynamic is very exciting, I think, right? There's with AI and with the commercial opportunities that are out there, right? Be open with your longer term plans, because things will change, and also be flexible with respect to the technologies that are emerging, right? I was studying aerospace engineering, but then as an engineer right now, nowadays, you really have to know software. You have to, AI is part of every engineer's, well, it is it's becoming part of every engineer's job. So the flexibility with no matter what type of engineering degree you have or technical degree you have, learn, become more diverse, right? In a wide range of technologies, because that will help you over time, right? Because tech stack is evolving very fast, and I think being flexible and more of a continuous learning is going to be very, very critical moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably a lot of consensus on the values of being malleable and not having a rigid view of the world. But you're right. I mean, it's not the, in the same token, I can imagine it could be a bit overwhelming if you're earlier in your career, not knowing where to start. But it sounds like if you at least start with a domain, and then from there, just appreciate that you may have to branch out in short order, in order to have a big picture that can be really valuable.
That's right.
Kenny, before we wrap up, last question. Anyone in your network who's had a meaningful impact on you over the years that you'd like to give a shout out to?
That's a great question. Many people, right? I think it's looking back, it's hard. I had the opportunity to work with great people, great, engineers, scientists, managers, especially during my time at NASA, NASA Johnson, NASA Ames, great leaders. One person that I think comes to mind, this is when I was at NASA Johnson Space Center, and it went up to now when I live in the Bay Area. One of the astronauts, actually, Steve Smith, who's a local astronaut guy from California. I think his leadership skills was I saw that as a model for my future career when I grow to become a leader. I think he really set the stage example of how to be a leader, a leader to a team, to accomplish a mission. But so one person that stands out, but then there were many throughout my career. And that's another part is find a mentor, right, for new engineers, scientists that entering the field. Find a mentor that and learn a lot and during each stage of your career.
I think that's sage advice. Any opportunity to shorten the learning curve is great. Mentors provide just, good mentors can provide great feedback loops, and just keep us on the straight and narrow, or at least not let us deviate too far off. But shout out to Steve. That's fantastic. Kenny, thanks so much for your time. Great having you on. If there are any members of our audience who would like to get a hold of you or learn more about Kaolin Space, how can they find you?
They can contact me through Kaolin Space. Kaolin Space is again, it's one. You can go to my website, kaolinspace.com, Kaolin with CCAYLAN space. Or again, contact me through that path. I'll be happy to talk to you.
Fantastic. And again, for the benefit of our audience, Kenny Vasai, founder of Kaolin Space. Kenny, thank you again. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Christian.
My pleasure. And again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder, CEO of FinTrap Management. This has been another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Thank you for joining us. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag innovators and investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.